All right, I have no disclosures to make. The only people who are funding this planning project so far are both of our institutions, Texas A&M Health Science Center, School for Rural Public Health, and Florida State University's College of Medicine, because they believe in the process, and they are supporting us while we go out panhandling for money from everybody. And it's not that there aren't agencies that are interested and supportive of rural healthy people. I want everybody to know that. I think everyone is aware that federal dollars are extraordinarily tight. And when we made the initial approach, most of the dollars had already been committed to other programs. So when HRSA took a hit, their first commitment was to things that had already been approved for funding. When CDC took their hit, same thing. So that's the sad news. That's my sad story, my tale of woe. This is us, we have no interests. What we're gonna do today is I'm gonna kind of give you a little bit of history of Rural Healthy People. We're gonna talk about the goals of 2020. We're gonna talk about the results from the priority setting survey, and we're gonna talk about the goals overall for the project. To give you a little bit of history in a nutshell, Rural Healthy People 2010 was intended to be like a companion document to Healthy People, which has been around for decades, but has never included rural populations, hasn't really looked at disparities as a function of geography, that you see even more so racial ethnic disparities within rural areas as contrasted from urban racial ethnic disparities. So it's like a very interesting topic, but it was never included. So we went on a parallel path funded by the Office of Rural Health Policy to come up with a companion. Our focus was to identify of the healthy people 2010 focus areas and objectives, which of those were priorities for rural America, which made sense, for which were there evidence suggesting that this is a big deal, and what kinds of things might be best practices that people's used. So we did a survey, which is not surprising to anybody. We looked at, you know, what people knew as models that were out there being employed by rural communities, and we did look at the evidence to support the concern of area residents, of area providers, that these were problems for them. Everything that those of us who write grants know is necessary to be able to go after a grant as well, so it's good for everyone. But bottom line, the goal was to provide for rural health leaders and policymakers rural-specific information and data. We published a couple of volumes, actually three. They were hard copy. You can't find those anymore, but I have a set. So, you know, just see me afterwards. In 2001, I'm not going to go over all of these, but these are the top basically 20 priorities that came out of that initial look, and I think there were 30-something focus areas at that time. Not surprisingly, the first rank that wasn't tied with anything is access to care. I'll spoil the punchline for you for 2020. Access to care is still the number one priority. Some things don't change, and most of the others you're going to see look the same as well. But the survey went out primarily to what in rural circles we'll call the usual suspects. Okay, we went to the Primary Care Association, we went to the providers, we went to the hospital administrators, we went to the people that you would usually ask those kinds of questions. We really didn't have a vehicle or a way to really get down into the community the way we've tried to do this time. The general themes that we learned in 2010, that there are serious health problems and challenges in rural areas, in some cases more so than in urban and suburban areas, that many rural populations, surprise, lack health insurance, small employers, need I say more, and have limited access to service providers. We learned that there are people out there in communities that are doing amazing things, models of things that work, with funds from ORHP, with their outreach grants, or other sources of dollars that they've been able to lay hands on to try and just address some of their own problems. Some of the models of practice, kind of themes associated with these, the one that is my favorite is the make-do strategies. We're all accustomed to, you know, sort of like stone soup. You look and say, what have we got? What have we got? We got a problem. What have we got? And you make that work for you. People who don't talk to each other, they talk to each other now, and you just kind of bring them together. You also had a heavy emphasis back in early 2000 and the 1990s of really trying to develop health promotion, screening, care management. Makes a lot of sense. keep people healthier, they don't require the care, so the fact that you don't have this huge workforce is not as big a deal, and many communities do have local public health departments, and those were the kinds of things that maybe they could do. Obviously, common challenges, it has not changed, is funding and stretching local resources, which we all know it's not just the federal governments, the budgets are feeling the pinch, it is hugely state, hugely local governments. So we're all in a world of rural hurt anyhow. Okay, so 10 years later, what are the priorities for now? And I'm getting to the punchline. You're just going to have to wait a couple more seconds. So 10 years later, now we're wanting to do Rural Healthy People 2020. Well, guess what? We're still doing a companion. Healthy people just didn't get with the program that, hey, you know, look through. Now, instead of being, you know, 20 or 30-something focus areas, now there's like 38, 40. And instead of having, you know, 300 objectives, there are 500, 800, however many objectives. And if you really look, you have to look very, very carefully to look for racial and ethnic disparities specifically identified as such, for geographic disparities. It's not that things aren't in there, but they don't have the same, I don't know, gravitas. It just isn't there. So we're trying to do our own thing again, looking at a multi-year, multi-agency project designed to engage rural experts, not just rural health experts, but rural experts from around the country. So 10 years later, our goal again, let's develop our rural health priorities, find the evidence that supports those priorities, and look at best practice community models. This has become even more important from our perspective because as dollars are tighter, accountability has become more and more and more important. As we write our grants, at the bottom of everything it says, which Healthy People 20X objective does your project apply to? But it's never said which Rural Healthy People 20X does your project apply to. So what can we do as far as taking this huge array of even indicators and identify those that rural experts, rural community members see as the most pressing for them? You know, within the next 10 years, if we were going to make a dent in anything, what do we want to make a dent in? And saying access is just way too big. So that's part of the goal here. Also to disseminate rural program support tools that can be shared. What can we get out to communities? Because they don't have the money any more than we do to be able to come and say, Dr. Bellamy, Dr. Rhodes, Dr. Young, would you come to a study for me? We want to do this. Would you come implement and evaluate this for me? They can't always do that. So maybe there are things we can do that help them along the way. That takes much less of our time, but that provides them some guidance. So we've got our strategic planning. I'm going to run through these. All these slides are online. We're going to create a Rural Healthy People 2020 Advisory Committee to try and get a broad-based group of folks, including rural IT people, rural, you name them. Get everybody in a room and kind of say, you know, what's important? How do we do this well? We're going to look at how successful we were with the 2010 stuff. You know, how big a difference did it make? What kind of research came out of it? What kind of new learnings came out of this? What kind of models came out that were identified, and how broadly were they disseminated around the country? Did it have any impact? You know, how useful an exercise is this? Again, national engagement of stakeholders to come up with those priorities. Working with the CDC, particularly prevention research centers, and their Community Guide for Preventive Services Leadership. There are lots of great programs that CDC identifies, but like so much of our policy and everything else, the scale is too large. You know, you can only scale down some of our interventions so much. So a project that you do in a small city like Tallahassee, where I live, of 150,000, 180,000, try and take that down to a population countywide of 5,000. Let's get real. The fit's not going to work because the assets and resources are not as available there. So how do we do these things? And also continue with the best practices and the models, but maybe look at the best practices and models really targeting those priority areas and maybe those specific important objectives that people identify. Continuously working with people and engagement of our rural health researchers, our colleagues like those of us in the room here today and others around the country, to have them work in the same area to identify what evidence is out there that makes our case. Because that's the information that we use when we talk on the Hill, either in Tallahassee or here in D.C., and where our community members can talk to their county commissioners and others. The models of practice, priority area toolkits to employ for them developing their proposals, looking at other vehicles for dissemination that is not just web-based. I don't know about you, but some of the rural counties in the northern panhandle, they're still on modem, or they're still on things that it is so slow to dial up that by the time they would get to any of our websites, you know, 20, 30 minutes, an hour would have passed, and that really is not helpful. So what other vehicles do we have for dissemination? All right, so the survey, I told you I'd get here. We'll try and go very quickly. We looked at the questions we'd asked way back in 2000. We tried to update them and clean them up. We got multi-stakeholder input. We got our URL, because this was now a web-based survey, and we got a variety of groups and associations to put that URL on their websites, because there's no such thing as an address list for all of these people. So the National Rural Health Association put it on their web and put it in their e-newsletter that goes around to their 20,000 members. The National Rural Assembly, which is funded by Kellogg, it is much, much broader than healthcare. They put it in their e-communiques and on their website. We went through the National Organization of State Offices of Rural Health, the National AHEC Organization. You name it, we touched as many people as we could. And in the end, we got about 679 responses. Now, it was only open for like from December 10th through January 5th, and so it's really not too bad, but it gives you an idea of the folks that responded. So Texas must have done an extraordinary job of getting the word out. And do not look at the bottom of the list, because I am just humiliated. Okay? But it gives you an idea. Now, we're still missing some areas here. We really don't have great representation from the South. We really don't have great representation from the West Coast. But at least you're getting out there somewhat. All right? So we still have work that we want to be able to do, but this is what we had. And this is what we learned. And many of these are going to look very, very similar. And maybe later, if there's time, I can try and pull the two together for you to see. But as I said, there's access to health care. Number one, diabetes is still up there. Nutrition and weight, the same things that you saw before are still up there. But what's interesting, when you look at the top 20, what I found fascinating was that for 2010 and now for 2020 again, it may not show up until the bottom of the list, but environmental health services. I have a colleague from West Virginia, and her Rural Health Research Center does environmental health. It's still up there. Our rural communities do have real and legitimate issues and concerns as far as environmental health stuff. But you also saw some new suspects. Health IT is now up there. Social determinants of health are now up there. I mean, I think it was pretty cool. All right. We kind of brainstormed. We looked at what did we do with the information that we had last time, and what could we do for 2020, and how useful would it be? So people, what do you think? So a directory of rural consultants, researchers, and specialists, would it be useful to you guys? And 56 people said useful or most useful on that kind of directory, so that I could send somebody to, you know, Wake Forest. I could send somebody to appropriate places nearby. Oh, let's go much quicker. But the big winners here were the rural models of practice, rural consultants, and then the rural toolkit for grants and funding. No surprises there. Model practices, 26%, 21% said they knew of model practices in their community. These were just interesting questions that we wanted to ask. How many people actually participated in any of the Healthy People 2020 planning for the new objectives? 26% of the rural folks. That was it. How many of these people have actually hosted meetings where they looked at Healthy People 2020 with a rural emphasis? Only 16%. We've got work to do. That's those guys again. Who responded? 1 minute. The very end, health providers, administrators, usual suspects, a lot of folks who are others, organizations statewide, 26%, but mostly local. That was the very, very good news. Statewide, you'd expect the state offices, primary care associations, rural health associations, local organizations, public health is there. I love it. FQHCs, community health centers, rural hospitals, pharmacies, what have you. And this is our big thing, and this is where I'm going to end up stopping. One of the big things we're going to do within the next year or two is really try and take us from focus areas down to some select objectives within each of those areas, that accountability measure. And this gives you an idea, because just within access to quality health services, there are 287 sub-objectives. So that's the big thing about what it is we want to do. You can find any information about us at the website, the bottom of this slide, the School of Rural Public Health. That's Texas A&M Health Sciences Center, EDU. Thank you very much, and I'll take any questions on Jane's behalf.
I'm from Wisconsin. I was proud to say number four there.
I'm not talking to you. Thank you for inviting me onto one of my favorite soapboxes, okay? One of the things that I think, and we're going to try and do this if we can get our dean and some other deans thinking in the same direction, is that interprofessional teams is the way things have to go, and rural is in our mission of our College of Medicine. But we don't build into our curriculum opportunities for those kinds of interprofessional learnings. So it's like you throw out new doctors and you throw out new nurses and say, okay, children, go play nice. It doesn't work that way. Doctors come out saying, well, we know this. And we don't trust what the nurses know and what those pharmacists know. God knows, and the social workers, well, I don't know. I lead the team and life is good. If you don't learn with one another and see where the various competencies are, how they complement one another, how you're not always the lead when it comes to certain problems, you're never going to get there. So one of the interesting problems that we have is that our first-year students, they start in the summer. So we're such a mismatch in terms of timing with all of this. So, and on top of it, and this takes it back to those of us who are in the room, of how many of us in our clinical lives practice in interprofessional teams so that we can model what we're saying, so that our students can look at us or come into an interprofessional team and have as much of an opportunity to round with the pharmacist as they round with the physician or with the social worker and hear the kinds of questions and kinds of issues that they deal with. So I think that is huge. I think that is a model of practice that I'm sure it exists somewhere. I'm sure there are some states or communities that have tried to do this. And if they haven't, then all of us need to go home and kind of rustle up some of our nearest and dearest friends and start creating a model of practice.
Can I just say, I'm sure that the American Association of Pharmacists for staff here this year. And I've been voting our program
like this,
and I've been trying to find programs
around
the country.
Please tell me to. We had Daryl Kirch, is that his name? AAMC? We had him come and talk at our 10th anniversary, and I asked that question. And he thinks that maybe, sort of, it's going to kind of happen. I mean, I think he understands the concept. I really believe there are a lot of leaders in medicine out there who really do get it. And we just need to keep knocking our heads against that brick wall. And sooner or later, with enough heads knocking, it'll come down. Thank you, everybody.